All right. Let's get fired up here.
Maximum freedom. Read.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom. Read Rothbard.
Well, hello and welcome to the Actual Anarchy Podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about movies from a Rothbardian anarcho-capitalist perspective. Tonight, we're going to renew as we enter the land of make-believe, Mr. Rogers style, with the miniature city and everything as we talk about Logan's Run with a good friend of ours. He's a returning guest who we will introduce on the Last Nighters portion of the show. But you can find the show notes and more for this episode at actualanarchy.com/222. This is the 222nd episode of this year's show. I can't believe we've been doing it this long. Robert, we're probably reaching last day here. What are your thoughts on that? And how are things going over on your side of the mountains with the snowstorm? Snowpocalypse 2021.
You know, I don't have a problem with anything you just said. I just wish you could repeat it all just in a way that's, you know, less white. Talking about snow and your disgusting, gross, offensive whiteness is really, really bothering me right now. And in fact, the snow's really bothering me right now. It is coming down sideways. There's a bit of a windstorm and the flakes are really, really fat. It's actually quite warm. It's been warm lately, and now it's dumping. So as I was leaving to come here, there was probably about an inch on my car, and I'm guessing as I leave after the show, 3 hours later, I wouldn't be surprised if there weren't like 3 or 4 inches on the car. It's really come down hard. So I'm excited. Hopefully this connection doesn't cut out. I know I'm on a like a line of sight situation. It seems to be working just fine right now, but who knows?
All right, well, that works, and I will trust your judgment on the estimate of 3 to 4 inches, as I'm sure you're quite familiar with that. And we will get into the Last Nighters portion of the show after my terrible, terrible and untimely joke there. All right, here we go. Hey everyone, it's Daniel Elwood and Robert Eight of the Last Nighters fame, and you can find us on the Liberty Movement's YouTube channel, and you can also find us at lastnighters.com. Tonight is episode 165 of the show, and we're going to be doing Logan's Run, and I mentioned this earlier, but we're in the pre-show bonus content, but we're entering the land of make-believe Mr. Rogers style as we talk about a centrally planned, evenly rotating economy where a computer does most things for people. So they can just hang out at the Dallas Galleria wearing ridiculous clothes. That's right. It is Logan's Run. And it is one of the favorite movies of our guest, Dr. Dennis Foster. He was on recently for the Nazi film Conspiracy, but he's also been on for a couple of classics. And we always have a good time with you. Welcome back to the show. You might need to unmute real quickly and then say hello, Dennis.
Thanks, Dan. Yeah, it's great to be back. I think the we also did The Day the Earth Stood Still, which was a double feature. But Logan's Run, a longtime favorite of mine. It's what now 40 years, I guess. So some of the elements don't wear very well, but I still think it's a really good movie. Good movie to review too.
Right, I totally agree. And we also did Soylent Green, which was a very popular episode. And like I was saying, you know, we always enjoy the conversations with you. You because of your demeanor and your education level and intelligence, you add a certain layer of intellect that we otherwise lack here on this show. So I appreciate you for that, for grounding us in like actual, you know, economic theory and considered responses to questions and whatnot.
Well, I'll be sending you a bill.
All right. That's great. I just got an electric bill, actually, or electrician's bill. So we also, Robert was mentioning in the pre-show that we had a snowstorm recently, or he's having a snowstorm now. When we had our snowstorm, the power went out, and it was out for like 2 days. And in anticipation of getting power surges, I turned off the main breaker to the house. I think I already told this story on a previous episode. But I tested it like a couple hours later just to see if the power was back on, and it wouldn't turn back on. Or no, it wouldn't turn back off. So it would turn on, and then I couldn't turn it back off because the power had not yet been restored. So I call this electrician out, and they come up, and they think they're going to need to replace the whole board. You know, the whole like wall panel is going to be like $2,000. And he comes out, and he's like hanging on the main switch, like with all of his weight. And he finally gets it to close and go to the off position. He's like, oh yeah, I think I just had to reset this thing. So, you know, I can get out of here or whatever. He was here for like 20 minutes. Just got the bill today, $300. Yeah. Yeah. Now it reminds me of the old story about, a mechanic is like called out to do this job and fix a thing. And all he has to do is like turn one screw, like so far. And he sends them a bill for like a couple $100. And they're like, what the heck are we paying for? You were here for like 5 minutes. He's like, well, yeah, but you see, I knew which screw to turn and how far, and that's what you're paying for. So
paying for that experience.
Yeah. Now, if I had known that I could just hang on this circuit breaker and like not tear it off the wall or destroy my house, maybe I would have done that. But I was a little bit more cautious, and I think that would have been far more expensive if I had done it myself. So it probably worked
well,
out.
Well, I was watching a video some time ago of a guy who does a lot of fixing of cars, and he actually is very smart about it, very mechanically inclined. But he's also signed up to some app where when he gets stymied, he just calls somebody up on the app and then runs his camera and shows the video, or just, you know, turns on the camera and shows what he's trying to do, and somebody helps him through it. And I think the app cost him, you know, like $100 a year to be on it. And I thought, well, that's not bad. That would be the kind of thing that we'd want to check into for the problem like you've got, or that you had.
Oh, so like he as a consumer could just have this app and be like, hey, you know, call up electrician on there and be like, all right, what do you think?
Yeah, here I'm showing you what it looks like and what I'm trying to do. And then the guy will say, well, just hang on it. And it'll, you know, cost you $5 instead of.
Yeah, I might look into that. And we'll get a affiliate link so we can offer that out to our Patreon supporters and other whatnots. By the way, I want to mention thank you for your Patreon support. I don't mean to like make that public knowledge that you support us not only with your presence, but also with your Federal Reserve notes. And while they still spend, we do appreciate them. So thank you for that.
Well, nobody's graffitied my house yet, so.
Well, it's coming. Just wait. All right. Well, how we normally start this off is with the old Google description. So I'm going to try to pull up the information here. So let's see. Logan's Run came out in 1976, rated PG. In fact, this was before PG-13 was even a thing. It's a sci-fi action film, 2 hours in length. I got a 6.8 on IMDb, 62% Rotten Tomatoes, and 53% Metacritic. However, 87% of Google users like it. The description reads, in the year 2274, young residents enjoy an idyllic, hedonistic lifestyle within the protective confines of a domed city. The general belief is that when each person turns 30, they are reincarnated for another blissful life cycle. Those who know that much darker truth become runners and flee to the hidden sanctuary. When law enforcement officer Logan, played by Michael York, goes undercover to locate the refuge, he winds up instead trying to initiate a revolution with fellow runner Jessica, played by Jenny Agutter. Came out in June 23rd, 1976, directed by Michael Anderson, budget of $9 million, which back in that time was actually a significant amount of money. It won several awards, including the Saturn Award for Best Set Decoration and Best Art Director, and some special effects awards, which I think they might be a bit dated today. Robert, what is your take on this here movie with your opening salvo and all of the wonderful special effects that we see on display with cutting edge 1976 filmmaking technology?
Well, I was betraying my age. I was 22 days old when this came out. But and yeah, you're right. The special effects don't hold up. They're quite funny, almost laughable. But the sound effects, I think the sound design in its own way really holds up. Like I was still enjoying those effects. Now, maybe if I watched a whole bunch of 70s movies, a whole bunch of like 70s sci-fi stuff all at once, I'd get a little bit tired of it. But these days it's almost like a breath of fresh air going back to these old movies and listening to these weird synthesizer sounds that they came up with back in the day. Cause you just don't hear that stuff anymore. I mean, maybe some new composer will take an element of this or that, but you really don't get the full on effect of the full, I don't know, whatever it was, a Korg or a Roland synthesizer at the time. But the movie itself, like when I told you, you know, we talked about this doing this last week, and I said, you know, this is a movie with a high concept, really strong concept, but like it has aged just like I have, even though not as well, right? I mean, I've aged like a fine wine, but this movie, not so well. But this is a movie that is ripe for a remake, I think. I think it's such a strong concept, and you could just do so much with it. Like you said in the pre-show, you were saying how the movie hits on a lot of the big beats from the book, but you can mess with and fiddle with the details all you want. Like you could just hit, you could start out with a main character in this dystopian city where they have this, you know, death at 30 thing and get into all the psychological effects of that. But then you could really take it anywhere as long as you end up at the same spot, you know, in about two or three different places at most. You could really tell an interesting story with this concept. It's so strong. But we're not talking about my imaginary remake. We're talking about the original movie. And luckily, we got Dennis on here to talk about also the original book, as he says the book is one of his favorites as well. So we'll probably want to get into that a little bit. But the main thing here is the story is actually fairly well engaging. It is slow. It's, you know, it's a bit hokey at times. And of course, the special effects and the makeup and the whatever is a little bit weirdo. But the, you know, if you looking at it with my old eyes, it's almost quaint and fun in a way, like looking at the, like the diorama of the city, and then the costumes are all fun. And I have issues with the story, and I'll probably want to get into that, because I think the concept is so strong. And I want to talk to Dennis about the actual story of the book, because maybe they just copied it straight away, but I'll just stop right now. Say it's say right over what I've said so far, and then I'll try and work in my complaints about the plot as we go along. Okay. That's it.
Can't hear you, Daniel.
Yeah.
Oh, Daniel. Yeah. Sorry. You know, I was trying to improve the show here just on the fly by me not talking. But you know, make note of those things that you want to say, because I always think of something I want to say and then I forget it. So maybe like in a presidential debate, you know, just write down, or just even pretend write it down. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, okay. Here's one thing. We can start off with this if you want. Like the whole concept is that these people are living in this dome city, and all their wants and needs are taken care of by robots, which is basically what the Peter Joseph fantasy of communism, yeah, right?
Like Wall-E.
Exactly. It's Wall-E, or it's one of those little terrarium bubbles with all the self ecosystem
that's
self sustaining. Exactly, a biodome where one person is born for every person that's killed. And were we assuming that they eat whatever the robots create for them out of the fish and the fungus and the whatever? Or were these people like vegetarians? We don't. Do they say that?
That's kind of revealed later. It's kind of revealed later that it's a bit Soylent Greeny.
Oh,
or at
oh,
least
is
it's
it?
Unclear.
Okay, yeah, but okay. There's the one guy that gets killed. He gets turned into hamburger and then he disappears.
Right. I don't mean to get too far down the path, but Box, the proto Darth Vader, he's freezing the people who are the runners, right? And there's like 1,000 people who've run, or 1,056. He's freezing them and storing them for food because the protein from the oceans is no longer available. It's been depleted. So it leads one to wonder if Box is then, instead of providing food from the sea to the city, he's providing the runners back as food to the city.
Okay. So
my impression was that he was not. That, you know, like the AI in the city doesn't even know that Box is there. He's like a precursor from when the city was more like a normal city. And he just keeps doing, he's like the perfect bureaucrat. He keeps doing his function.
He's like Wall-E, who kept making the garbage little cubes and stacking them, even though he was like the last one. He was scavenging other parts.
Despite the inputs and the reason for him existing and doing that totally changed and gone on and passed. He's still doing his job.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a pretty good opening, Robert. And I know you've got a lot more to say, but to your point of it being kind of slow, yes, it is kind of slow. My wife and I think I told you the story in IM. We tried to watch this on Sunday night. She made it about a half an hour and was like, I can't do it. So I started watching the rest of it. I made it another half an hour and I'm like, I can't do it. So we started it over last night and wife made it about an hour, just, you know, from the beginning. And she's like, ah, girl. Sorry, it's got me. And I tried watching it and I made it to the end. However, there's bits and pieces where I'm like, I felt like I just woke up again. I'm like, wait, I don't know what just happened. Like the last 5 minutes, I might have missed it. So if I have any problems with the plot, like any plot holes that I can identify, they might not actually be plot holes. It just might be like I was asleep for a few moments.
Well, for me, at the end of the movie, and he was getting interrogated by the computer, and then all of a sudden the computer started blowing up. I felt like I had missed something, so I rewound it and watched it, and I still felt like I was missing something, and then I rewound it and watched it again. And no, it really just seems like he blows up the computer by giving it a wrong answer. So I don't know if Dennis can shed some light on that, but it really seemed like he was confusing the hell out of this computer just by saying something it didn't believe. And then the whole city blows up.
That was just something that you just have to kind of go with the flow, but it doesn't make any sense. It's the captain, wasn't it Captain Kirk doing that to one of the computers in the original Star Trek on some planet?
Yeah.
He's trying to outfox it and cause it to break down. And it's like, seems like the same idea, but it's
the
not.
The Voyager probe that thought it was God or something like that?
Yeah.
That's a good movie. Also a slow one.
Slow burn. That's how it is. Sci-fi. It's good.
Yeah. Star Trek, the slow motion picture. All right, Dennis. Well, why don't you tell us what about this movie and book like really stands out to you? What makes it in the pantheon of greats for you?
Well, I think just about everything about it is great. And, you know, probably part of it is that I saw it at the right time in my life. As it turns out, it came out on my birthday. I didn't realize that until just when you were reading that that date. But I had just graduated from college. I had a longstanding interest in science fiction anyway. This is still before Star Wars. And it seems like back then there were sort of psychological sci-fi types of movies. And the other sort of real sci-fi were things that came out in the 50s and 60s. So it was kind of new, groundbreaking in that regard, in terms of sort of opening this up. But I really liked the ideas, the wrestling with this thing about overpopulation, sort of like the Soylent Green. It's a kind of a nice movie to compare to that, although it's not as explicit as in Soylent Green. But dealing with those kinds of problems in this futuristic world, I really like the characters. I think the characters are very well developed. Logan, Francis, Jessica are all really strong characters, even the minor characters.
Fawcett's
okay. Yeah. The doctor is okay. And so that I think is some pretty strong writing, even though it is based on the book. I think some pretty strong writing. I don't, maybe it's just I'm more in tune with sort of enjoying the ambiance of the environment. And so the 2 hours goes by pretty fast for me. I also watch the extended versions of Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. and part of it's because I don't really care if anything's happening. I just want to sort of think of myself as being there.
Yeah.
And so, that doesn't bother me so much in terms of the pacing. But I think the dialogue is good. They have like just the right amount of humor. If they had more, it would seem campy. And they aren't trying to play it perfectly serious. So I think that works really well for it. And you got, again, questions from the population issue to religion, right? The carousel thing is really just a metaphor for religion. And it really, as you walk away, probably start thinking about more and more aspects to the film that you kind of find interesting and want to know sort of more about.
Yeah. Now I heard that the carousel was actually not in the book. It was added to the screenplay. Is that true?
Now that's a good question. I have read the book 25 years ago.
Okay. All so right. What do I remember? In there.
I don't remember much of it, except that the characters were the same and Logan's running away with Jessica. And there's this cathedral place where cubs are kept and things like that. And somehow there was last day. I think they still called it last day, but I don't know what the mechanism was for sort of ending everybody's life.
Okay. Yeah. I had thought that maybe it would have been like, you know, in the movie In Time starring Justin Timberlake, that they had the little imprint or the little thing in their arm and it was counting down how much life they had left and they could exchange that, trade that as currency. I thought that the gem in their hand would act in a similar fashion. So it would change different colors as they were different phases. And as they were blinking, they were near their last day. And that would like biometrically, you know, shut them off or whatever. Like, what
their
some people
explode.
Yeah. Yeah. Like in, what was that?
The Boys or
no, not Total Recall. It's a Schwarzenegger. We did it. Running Man, the Running Man.
Okay. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think the carousel was added, I think, to the screenplay just to give it something more able to be visualized and also maybe to give them sort of this hope that they can, if they are good enough or do the right thing or are strong enough, that they can achieve what do they call it? Not reincarnation. Renewal. So like it gave them an opportunity or gave them hope. Because really what we're dealing with here is a big lie, right? This whole system is run on this lie that you have to die at 30 to make room for a rebirth or a renewal, and that there's this evenly rotating, perfect, you know, one in, one out kind of, you know, club mechanism by the bouncers that this thing is all operating on. And it does play into the ideas at the time of, you know, overpopulation and overconsumption of things and whatnot. But I think that you almost have to have this propaganda, this big lie, to get people to willingly go and do these things, you know, to willingly go into carousel or to willingly go into knowing that, hey, it's my last day, but I'm going to be renewed. So it's not a big deal. And it's only those minority, the very few, who realize, no, you know what? You actually are dead. And we could probably live, you know, twice as long or three times as long. All we got to do is run and get out of here. And of course, it's revealed later that no one has ever actually renewed and no one has ever actually fully made the escape, though the computer doesn't seem to know that. Like the computer knows about 1,000 people got out, but it doesn't know what happens outside of the seals of the city. And that's where this character Box comes in and apparently has captured everybody.
Yeah, indeed. Going back to just the initial setting of the movie, I want to talk just a little bit about this. Where now I will forgive, you know, economic errors in movies. There's a million of them. I make a lot of hay out of economic errors in movies. But as long as they're telling a good story, I can forgive them. Now, in this movie, I think does almost the best job of explaining away what otherwise would be, I think, a big plot hole. Where you've got the steady state world where there's one in, one out, but it doesn't take into account at all for human invention, human ingenuity. Like people would become more efficient with things. People would look at or at their surroundings and try to make them better. But in this world, there's such a infantilized society, right? I mean, they got these, they don't really have to work. They don't really, I mean, I guess the one guy does a face job. Is that the one job we see in the whole movie? Is either the mission or the face
the
job?
The Sandman. I guess right. That's sort of a job.
It's sort of a job, but there's no like, you don't see people like working repairs or working on engineering or anything like that, right? There's no computer programmers or anything like that. But I guess to get away from that kind of issue, they set up this world where they're primarily focused on pleasure, sex. They die at 30, so they don't get too smart, right? And, you know, you kill off any kind of, I don't know, old wisdom that's not, like, distracted by sex all the time. So in this sense, I guess it works more for me in that, if it is, it's kind of like WALL-E where, these people are just constantly entertained and fed all the time. and they're not really looking to move the ship or escape the place or make their food more efficient or, you know, whatever, so that they could support a higher population, you know, because generally speaking, you'd be like, well, I don't want to die, but you're right. They got this religious idea where like, oh, we're not actually dying. We're being renewed. So it's quite a cohesive worldview. So I appreciate that about it. So props to the main story writer there. I like that.
Well, if I can add to that, I also was sort of, as I was taking some notes, troubled with the notion of what do people really do? The inclination, you know, the opening line is something about they just live for pleasure. And it's like, but again, we know that people must work. Besides the guy, the doctor, we also saw the two guys that were cleaning up the dead body.
Oh yeah, they're floating on the little machines. These got to break down every once in a while, don't you think?
How do they get their job? And who decides who's a Sandman? And can you decide not to be a Sandman? Can you do something else? And all that, I think, just purposely is just left off on the side. We're not going to deal with it because it gets to open up too many more cans of worms. But it seemed to me that clearly there's some kind of work that everybody does. There's some kind of hierarchy. Jessica says, you know, gee, I'm curious about how a Sandman lives, which, you know, tells us that they're a different caste, even though they are seemingly well integrated into the general population.
Some animals are more equal than others.
Exactly. And I, in fact, watching the movie again for this, for the very first time, I found out or recognized that the color of the clothes matched your stage on the life clock.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was more random, but if you're wearing green, it's because your little crystal is green. And if you're wearing red, that means your crystal is red. So there was a visual cue to who is older and who is younger in the general population.
And the kids were yellow, right? And it's the cubs who are outside of the city. They were like almost the feral kids, because there's an interesting dynamic here where family and the family unit is totally destroyed in this, like the whole concept of a husband or a wife or a
much actual, like Brave New World.
Yeah. Like a nurturing mother or father.
Family unit. People just have sex. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a totally foreign concept.
They have sex, but they don't procreate that way.
Right. Or if they do, it's a, like a donor situation. Cause like when he's in that nursery at the beginning, I took it as that's his child from his like genetic donation, but that's the end of it, you know? And the other guy was like, you know, why do you even go down there? You know, like, why are you being so curious and weird? This is a creepy thing that you're doing. You know, the whole concept of family or offspring or having any attachment to anything. And it feels almost prophetic in a way, watching this and comparing it to how, I don't know, what the narrative is in the progressive culture these days, where they want to destroy the whole like patriarchal structure of words. Like, didn't the House pass a resolution that you can't use like gender conforming like names talking about family and relationships?
Yeah,
something like that. Yeah. Well, and also in this film, they do a little bit where they destroy language, or they remove, you know, negative connotations of their jobs, right? Where she's like, well, you kill these people. And he's like, I've never killed anybody in my life. What are you talking about? I terminate them or they get renewed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't kill anybody. What are you talking about? I'm not a bad person.
No, then later on, he like refers to it two or three times later and talks about it as killing. So I thought that was interesting. And I don't know if that was like they missed that, or he was like making the connection and showing his evolution as a character, like his arc. But it seemed a little sudden when I heard him admit to actually killing people later on. Like, it didn't feel like it had changed him. I felt like it was just like they accidentally said it or something.
But there was that turn, right? When all of a sudden, we're not sure if he was acting at the time, because it's like a secret job to do, right? To infiltrate these rebels or whatever. But at one point he does say, well, no, this is different. We're talking about my life now. So this matters, instead of just somebody else's life. So it seemed like he was all of a sudden concerned about the act of killing when it could be him.
Right.
So I kind of took that to be a genuine moment as opposed to him pretending.
Yeah. Now to tie this back to the whole concept of like the rebirth or the renew, I feel like the Sandmen had no problem doing what they did because they were like, oh, we're not killing, right? We've changed the language. And these people are just going to get renewed anyway. So it's not a big deal. And we can laugh about it and treat it as if it's sport. And I was watching that portion where they're chasing that runner in the Galleria and like shooting at him, like almost playfully and like telling him, run, runner, run. That they were doing that, like stripping him of humanity, you know, just treating him like he's something to be hunted. And that it reminded me of, you know, sometimes you'll see movies where they'll depict Nazis or somebody doing a really horrific thing and they're laughing about it because they've removed that act from any moral obligation on their part. You know, like they don't feel like they're doing anything wrong for a multitude of reasons, you know, changing the language or just viewing them as the other or as something less than human.
Right. Yeah. And story-wise, I think it works really, really well. I think that it conveyed exactly what the author intended, showing the lack of humanity for Logan in his classic hero's journey, where he is the bad guy at the beginning, he goes through an awakening, and then he ends up being the hero at the end. I was a little bit, I mean, from a storytelling standpoint, there's so many options and so many possibilities with this world that they've created. I almost wanted the runners to be more clever. I wanted the runners to, because you know you're going to die, right? You know, you got an end point. You got this, you get a last day when you're 30 and you could be thinking about your entire life. So you might want to plan a really cool run or escape or a really clever way or get enlist allies to help you get away and then, you know, work together and that kind of thing. Like the rebels do somewhat, but I do really like the scenes for the emotional conveyance and if the story relation. So still I can't find almost any faults in the story. As slow as it is, it was still very effective.
Yeah.
I thought there were like two classes of runners. There were those that were plugged into the underground movement, which would be the 1,056 that were unaccounted for over however long that was. And then there's another class that basically wakes up the last day and says, maybe I should try to do something else. But my question was, where do you think you're going to run to? Nobody's been outside. Nobody knows where the exit is. And so it seems like really an act of desperation. And I guess that kind of comes across with some of these.
Yeah,
I was going to note, sure. Following up on Robert's comment earlier, that my thought is that these people are sort of like the Eloy in the time machine, because they just, yeah, those we just do whatever we do, and then whenever the whistle goes off, we go become dinner for the other guys. And in this case here, they're not quite that docile, but they seem to be more towards that as opposed to what can I invent next? What can I do to make life better? They don't seem to be smart in any of those areas, probably by design, even though they do aspire to have better lives.
Yeah. Now, in the same way that our school system brutalizes out any kind of curiosity in our children, I think the people in this movie have been, there must be some kind of education system that completely conditions them to accept this environment, right?
Teaches you how to dress.
Yeah.
I thought you like those costumes, right?
More like a lottery that you have some chance of renewal. Nobody knows what the chance is, but it's not 100%. It's not a done deal. That was my impression always of this carousel part of the story.
Yeah, and the carousel event seemed to be half religious fervor event and half gladiatorial entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although I wondered, what is a good carousel? Because Francis says, oh, this looks like a good one. And I'm wondering,
yeah, what's how are they different? Yeah, really, right?
Well, a good happens? One would be where you can't see the wires.
Yeah. Just got to use your leap of faith.
That aged a little bit. But yeah, some of these things don't quite make sense now that we're talking about them. Like this perfect equilibrium, the one in, one out. Well, that belies the whole concept of the carousel where only some will allegedly make it, even though none of them actually do. So how are they really controlling, you know, this perfect equilibrium, first in, first out, one in, one out, when they don't know how many are allegedly going to win in the carousel?
Well, they know how many berths they need, right? I mean, I was paying closer attention to the announcement about carousel, and the first one at the beginning of the movie is Capricorn 15, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the movie, it's Capricorn 29. So I'm thinking, oh, well, everybody knows what their birthday is, some kind of astrological calendar, and you're born on Capricorn 15, and it's your 30th year. You've got to go to carousel that day. Well, they know who they are, and they know how many births they need to offset that.
So what if somebody were to allegedly win at carousel, then what do they do? Like do a super late term abortion on one of the kids in the nursery?
No, I think they just come back as a baby. I think.
I'm agreeing with Dennis here. I thought it was a reincarnation thing.
But it isn't clear. It's like, well, have you ever met somebody who says, oh yeah, I was reborn.
Well, I'm sure it's like they can't remember it, but when you're Robert 8 or Dennis 6, you know, you're the sixth version of Dennis, right? Or is the little baby at the beginning, doesn't he call it Logan 8?
Logan 7 or 6, yeah. But I thought that was just because he was the genetic donor.
And I think Francis was telling him that he doesn't know which one is Logan 6. But for some reason, he knows that he is the father of some child.
Okay, but he didn't think that it was his reincarnation, obviously. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not exactly clear on all that then.
Yeah.
Well, what you'd wonder, why would people keep believing it? We don't know how long they've been in this city, but if it's been generations, it's like, well, have you ever met anybody that grew up and said, oh yeah, I used to be, you know, whatever, Logan 3.
Right.
And well, of course, it's going to be no.
But wouldn't they have to know, like, there's all these kids in the nursery. So there's kids being born and there's people dying in the carousel and we don't know anyone who's come back. I mean, maybe it's just ambiguous enough to where no one questions it, but it just seems like the math wouldn't add up.
Well, that's why it's so religious, right? It's like you can hope for renewal. Presumably you come back in some baby, but maybe you don't have the baby's character. The baby grows up into its own character, but you just kind of ride along, you know, as a like a passenger.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And to Robert, to your point, I think that they sort of allude to there being this underground sort of rebel group or resistance. They have that symbol, the Ankh, that is a key to escape. And there is that group of people who are like in the rundown areas that they escaped to initially. And then there's also the Cubs in the cathedral. So there's like a bunch of little pockets of groups, and I'm not sure which ones counted as runners. Was it the ones who actually made it outside of the seals that the robot got and froze? Or is it some of the ones living in cathedral and this other area where they escaped to? Do those guys count as runners, or are they not runners because they're all under the age of 30? They just happen to be living outside of society.
Yeah, that's how I understood it. Was that the children didn't count? Like the computer still knew where all those people were, and the people that lived in the underground, they were just living outside society, but they hadn't yet turned 30 yet. I don't think that. I mean, even when Logan and Jessica went down there, they still didn't see anybody that was old until they met the old guy out in the Capitol building or whatever. So.
Yeah. They just needed the buffalo hat and be like, fucking hey, man.
Yeah, right, I was hoping for that, too. I think the people in the underground, that was just like a meeting room, right? Because Holly comes in later. And it's
right.
Like, these people just have their regular lives, but they know where this secret place is that they get together. You wonder, why don't they all leave at once? It's like, no, we're going to wait until we're 30 because we're going to try to profit as much as we can off the city
and then run the last individually.
Day, we'll go out that door and see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, we've got the key. Everybody's got a key to get out and we could all just leave right now, but for some reason we're not gonna. Yeah. That's a bit of a plot hole, I think. One thing that I had to laugh about was that once Logan and Jessica are out there and they discover this whole world, and Logan's like, you know what we need to do? We need to go back to the city and like tell all the people about this new knowledge that we have. And Jessica's like, are you retarded? They'll just kill you. And Logan's like, no, we got to do that. Cause that works every time. And as someone with a little bit of experience in that realm, just because you have a truth that you want to convey to other people doesn't mean that they're going to accept it, especially not when your tactic is to just yell at a crowd. And then hopefully they're going to be like, oh yeah, I'm going to go with that guy yelling over there. But for someone who's been in this game for probably, I don't know what, 10 years at least, people will fight you to defend the system because that system is all they know. And that is their livelihood. And if you're to come along and say, hey, you know what we need to do is just leave this whole life that supports you right now. They're just not going to be on board unless you have some really rock solid, not only reasons and evidence, but also to say that it's better outside. I mean, yes, he's saying that you can live, you don't have to die, go to Carousel, but like he would also have to show them that they're definitely going to die at Carousel, right? I mean, they've had this religious idea that some of them are going to be reborn or renewed or whatever. So he's really facing an uphill climb, and his whole strategy is to just yell at a crowd. I had to laugh at that. Listen to Jessica. She knows they're just going to kill you, man.
Yeah. I found it also a bit unbelievable that the guy chasing them could have discovered them all the way in the Capitol building. Like that he would have been able to trace them all the way there. I mean, maybe he's like a, you know,
expert level tracker, man.
Yeah.
Through the swamp, through the Potomac or whatever that was.
Yeah, through the reflecting pond or something.
Yeah, whatever that was. Yeah.
In fact, I was thinking about him when you were talking about this too, because he's a believer right to the very end. He has that great line where he says, "That's not the truth. This is a lie. The world he's actually seeing, he's claiming is a lie, and yet he's actually seeing it, and he doesn't really kind of repent until his sort of dying breath, right? And then he says that Logan's been renewed, which is kind of a weird way to go too. But it's like, if you can't convince him that the world that they're living in is an illusion, how are you going to convince all the people actually in the illusory world?
Yeah. Yeah. You got no chance. No chance. And he should have known better. But I mean, the movie's got to happen. They got to wrap it up. But that whole idea of he's just, I mean, talk about a wide-eyed idealist who has never tried to convince anybody of anything, that he's just going to walk in and totally change everybody's worldview based on him raving and ranting for a few minutes. That's pie in the sky fantasy right there.
Well, and he does have an earlier line with Jessica, because Jessica asked, I think this may have been in their first interaction. She goes, well, why do we have to die? You know, why do you have to stop runners? And he says, oh, you don't want to have those kind of thoughts. Those are bad thoughts. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, that's the way everybody thinks. And when you come in and start spouting off about stuff, everybody's going to think that about you.
Yeah. Yeah. He should have known better. Honestly, it was kind of a big bonehead move that you're just like, I mean, I get it. Sometimes you can get so excited about an idea though, that you're just like, oh no, I just need to tell everybody about this amazing truth I found. And then they'll just be convinced like I was. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, that is not the way it works.
It didn't take you that long, but yeah,
it doesn't happen instantly. It definitely doesn't happen. You didn't yell at me as I was walking across the mall plaza. You didn't yell at me from the stairs for like 2 minutes. And I was like, oh really? Do tell.
I'm convinced.
My whole worldview is wrong. Ooh.
Tell me more. Yeah, so
no, people will defend their emotionally gotten into ideas, and they'll defend their worldview to the death. So yeah, no, you have to really convince them. It takes time. And obviously he doesn't have years to get into trying to convince anybody, but it would have been a little more realistic than what he did do.
But again, they needed to wrap up the movie somehow.
Yeah, and it was long enough as it was.
You almost feel like that second half, they could have developed a little bit differently and made it make a bit more sense. Like if there had been some people out there and then they had met up with them and maybe mounted some kind of like method or strategy to actually do something in the sense of rescuing people, like waking them up from the matrix and getting them escaped from the pods, that kind of a thing. Cause just finding this old Peter Ustinov guy, old cat lady guy, you know, it's kind of fun because it's Peter Ustinov and he's like a relatively famous guy back in the time, right? Mm-hmm. He was in a bunch of those movies in the '50s, right? Like we've done, we didn't do the Ten Commandments yet, but we did The Robe. And before that we did another one with the Anarcho-Christian. We're doing Ben-Hur with him soon for this upcoming Easter. But Ustinov was like in those types of movies, those big super scale productions, right?
Yeah, I think of him more in terms of some comedies, but still, he was a well-known actor.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to ask, this is not a theory of mine. This is just, I was reading about this movie and the production, and apparently went through production hell. They'd wanted to make it like 10 years earlier, back when Planet of the Apes came out, and maybe 2001 and a few other like science fiction-y movies that were kind of hot at the time. And that's when they sort of wanted to make this. And if that's on the back end of the, you know, counterculture, hippie revolution, like focus on the young, and does this movie, was it written as sort of a response to that and saying that, well, if you don't take the wisdom of the older folks, then you just have these stupid young people doing stupid stuff and believing anything. And, you know, they just end up dying. Because it certainly seemed like they weren't presenting this society of just young people. Like, yeah, sure, on the surface, it's a bit utopian, but really under the surface, it's pretty alarming what's going on here.
It's dystopian for sure, wouldn't you think? I mean, yeah, you got a whole bunch of people that very few people are actually questioning whether or not this is the best way to organize society. And those people are brutally killed. So yeah, it's not great.
Right. It's I wonder if that was an intentional thing, you know, sort of against the hippie culture of the time.
I want to say there was the popular phrase about don't trust anybody over 30.
Right.
That plays into all that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like, well, okay, then it'll be a young person's world. But again, they're not in control of anything. They're being controlled by, you know, some kind of computer intelligence, and there isn't any clear purpose, which is kind of interesting to think about in terms of this as a socialist metaphor. It also kind of reminds me of Ayn Rand's Anthem. There's a lot of similarities there too. But if this is like the perfect socialist utopia, what do you do? Apparently, you don't do anything, and you just wait to die. You might as well die at 30.
Yeah. And what's the meaning of your life when you're really, I mean, what's your purpose? I mean, like we said, the jobs were kind of whatever. I know the general communist idea is that, well, you could paint one day and then you could be a fisherman the next day and you could do this the next day and whatever. But you really didn't see any of that in this film. And you don't see any of that in WALL-E either. And those seem to be like the ultimate communist socialist utopias where the robots are just taking care of everything. And then humans are left to, they don't have to toil anymore, right? Because the toil just brings down your humanity and destroys your soul or whatever it is that they think it does. And so instead, you just have people just hanging out doing basically nothing. I mean, I think mankind needs purpose, right? And each person has to decide for themselves what their purpose is. But a big part of a human being's purpose, for what they understand, is in building and creating and caring for things. And if you don't have a family to take care of, and you don't really have a purpose in the sense that you're building anything, or you have any reason to exist other than your own pleasure, I think maybe you do got to kill each other off at 30, because otherwise they start to see that it's a pretty hollow existence. But you know, for when you're in your 20s and you're just having sex all the time, maybe it works. But I don't know. It's funny though, Daniel, you bring up Planet of the Apes, because I was reminded of Planet of the Apes in this film, because it is a guy and a girl, and they're running away from a society that thinks they're dangerous. They're trying to get them. And that's basically the plots of both movies. The setting is totally different and the societies are somewhat different, but I don't know. It just seemed very similar to me.
Well, Basil Exposition is no Chuck Heston.
Yeah, I would take Chuck over this guy. Although I think he did a fair job for the most part. He was a little bit noncy, but yeah, not bad.
Now, when they brought Michael York in to do Austin Powers as Basil Exposition, like that was a callback to like he was in other kind of kitschy spy movies and things like that before that, because I don't really know, but apparently it was a big deal that he made a cameo in the Austin Powers movies.
I mean, I know he was popular, right? He was young, handsome, leading man kind of actor, at least after this.
Yeah, the Austin Powers movie was the first time I ever saw him. So this is new. I mean, I've seen this movie before, but I think I saw the Austin Powers movies first.
Yeah, he almost looked the same.
A great role in the series Babylon 5, if you're familiar with that. One of their better episodes features him as the main character, which is a really good turn for him as an actor, I think.
Mm, okay. Very cool. Well, we're actually almost butting up against time. I know that always happens when we talk with you, Dennis. We run out of time before we know it. But does anyone have any final notes or points they want to bring up before we get into the summary and review portion of the show?
I have a quick thing, I think. And one of the things that comes out that makes you sort of think about in terms of the structure of the movie itself is that over the course of the movie, Jessica and Logan fall in love with each other. And I think, well, why isn't that happening all the time in the city? It's like, yeah, you've got the circuit and you can hook up with whoever you want, but it seems quite natural that you're going to end up with people falling in love with one another. And unless they have exactly the same birthday, that would seem to present a problem at the time of carousel. Mm-hmm. And again, that's just kind of left off. And it's like, well, they deal with it somehow, but.
Yeah, now in Brave New World, they deal with it through Soma, right? Like everybody's kind of drugged up and they kind of remove that issue of desire in the body or something like that. I forget what it is in Brave New World. But you're right. I think that that would absolutely happen. And there should be more people like Jessica, who's like, I just saw the person I love die. This is a bunch of crap.
Mm-hmm. Also, Equilibrium.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Where they took the little COVID virus thing to dull their senses.
Right. Get rid of all human emotion. All that problematic emotions.
Yeah. I wonder if it was because of the societal norms as depicted in this, is that it's so hedonistic and so casual sex that there is no real connection being made because they, you know, they're just constantly with somebody else all the time.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I mean, you got the, you'd have the sex on demand, basically, right? With the circuit, you're kind of almost like dating apps these days. And it is pretty difficult to find love, let me tell you. But I think Dennis is right. There's still a whole lot of face-to-face contact. There's still a lot of people interacting with each other. I mean, you didn't see people isolated. You saw them all in giant groups of people. And there's people talking and milling around and making friends, I'm sure, and developing relationships. And with those kind of human emotions in play, there's just got to be more conflict when it comes to carousel. Even if you think that, you know, it's a wonderful thing, you're right. I think that there's just got to be more questioning going on, more anger, more something, especially with young people who are just like born angry. You know, I remember being like 20, emotional. 25 years old, being super emotional, just being angry all the time. Like, this world is bullshit. Everything about it is a bunch of crap. This can't be the way we organize society. Where are all the angry young anarchists in this movie? It's just, where's Antifa? Well, come on now.
Now you're an angry old anarchist because you sound the same.
It's true. It's true. But I remember those days of being like 17, 18, and just being completely disgusted with everything. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe all the machines would have made me happy. I don't know. I doubt it.
Well, we would have been gone by now, Robert, all three of us.
It's true. We're all runners, or we're all dead.
Or we're all hanging out at the Capitol. Fucking hey, man.
Hanging out with cats. Naming cats. That's what we're doing.
But and I actually did like that he was a little nutty. You know, he was a little off. Because, yeah, he's been isolated for decades, right? Like, his parents raised him, and they were the only people he knew, and then they died, and he's just hanging out with cats. It would make sense. I was surprised he could actually speak English. Or would still remember to, or like could communicate with Logan and Jessica.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have some concessions for the movie, but yeah, it probably would have been a little more realistic for him to be somewhat of a wolf boy, a little bit at least. Although he's got around starting by books though too, and I'm sure he was brought up with language. So yeah, I don't know, but it would have been fun maybe if the people in the city had developed their own unique dialect and culture and were quite radically different from him though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe in a remake, and we talked about at the end of our most previous episode on Life is Beautiful, that you thought that this had a very strong premise and would be well worth taking a stab at with a Blade Runner 2049 Dune director, Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah, that guy, he could make it look pretty, real pretty. And he could do, like I said in the beginning of this episode, all you got to do is touch on a few beats, then it's just such a strong premise that you could do so many different things. And I don't know if you really need to do multiple installments. Like, I don't know if it has sequel status or sequel possibilities, but definite remake possibilities for sure. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Once that computer's logic board goes, because it can't compute, you know, it's hard to have a sequel after that. I mean, you could maybe have a, what happens after, like the Mad Max stories, sort of like, almost connected, but not quite, and they were pretty different.
Yeah, like the sequels to the Planet of the Apes movies, where they go under the Planet of the Apes, or the War for the Planet of the Apes, or the whatever, and this and that. I guess you could follow up, especially if you've got different cities. You could play with that, right? You could have this city and that city, and they could have different specializations or have evolved differently since they're all isolated. I don't know. You could probably do some things with it.
Yeah, they're all just in the same universe or whatever. Yeah, could be good. So, Dennis, you want to kick us off with your final summary and review, and let's give ratings out of, you know, how many Dennis's would you rate this? Dennis 6, Dennis 8.5, Dennis 9, whatever you got.
Yes. Well, I think that it's a great movie. I really like the characterization. The fact that the technology is dated doesn't really deter me so much. I actually had heard a couple of years ago that there was going to be a reboot of this movie, but I haven't checked anything lately. But I would agree that it would be really the kind of property that somebody could do something really cool with if they wanted to pursue that. The stories that are in the movie, the different kinds of major things about population, about death, about religion, I think are really key aspects to this that drive some of my interest. But then I think the character development is really good too, that they did a really good job of fleshing these different people out. When Logan ends up killing Francis, I mean, I feel sorry for him. I wanted Francis to, you know, see the light and stay as a real close friend to Logan, whom he was very attached to, at least in that way. So, so I give it like a Dennis 8.6.
All right. Very good. Very good. It's a solid score. And I think it recognizes that it's not a perfect film. Perhaps it's dated, perhaps it's reached last day. So it could be renewed, and I think it would be a good fit. Robert, how about you?
Yeah, so, man, this movie is as old as I am, so I don't want it to be too dated. I want it to still be, just keep going. I want it to be endless. I want people to still be watching this thing in 100 years. Why not? Why not? But, you know, it does have, it follows the classic hero's journey, which is always going to be popular. It has some strong characters. It, you know, it's a bit hokey. It, you know, obviously suffers from being a film of its time. But it's so strong in its concept. And even if you like your sci-fi slow, if you're okay with Star Trek, the first movie, then I don't think that's going to throw you off on this one. If you're expecting, you know, if you're a modern movie watcher, if you're like under the age of 30 and you're watching this movie, maybe it's not going to be your cup of tea unless you like the older stuff. You're one of those old connoisseur weirdo people. But if you're, you know, used to like Marvel movies type stuff, I don't think that this is really going to be your cup of tea. But maybe someone can come along and turn this into a modern sci-fi thriller film. It's got all the hallmarks. It's got everything that you would need, all the ingredients to make a fantastic film. So I'm hoping that in my lifetime, you know, before I hit 30, that we're going to see a fine remake of this film. And I would definitely go watch it. And I hopefully we would be able to do it on this show, because, you know, I'm sure we'll still be around doing this show, you know, because it's just Dennis's point. It looks like I just pulled up the Wikipedia, and it does look like they've been throwing this remake around for a long time. Like since the 90s, they've been talking about remaking this thing. I don't know if it's a rights issue or if it's a script issue or just the desire isn't there. But because I know that the remake of Blade Runner didn't do well financially, and that might have hurt this movie's chances of being made. But man, there's a lot here that could be turned into something special. So I can't give the original movie like a great score. I can't like give it anything north of like an 8 or something like that, but I can give it like a Robert 7 or a Robert 6.5 because of its potential and just the whole setting, and the actual story is pretty good too. So I'll give it a Robert 6.5. I'm giving it a positive review. It's not like amazing. It's not going to blow your socks off, but I think if this is your kind of thing, you will enjoy it.
All right. Well said. And I'll agree with both of you guys. Granted, it is a dated movie, but it does have some interesting concepts and some really good ideas that are presented. Now it sort of glosses over a couple of things, of course, but almost any story has to, as what we tend to do on this year's show is pick out the plot holes or the economic flaws or holes that would make it actually not work. And so they have to sort of hand wave some things away. But Michael York is, he's a good actor. Farrah Fawcett, I don't see what the big deal about her was in this movie, but I can understand why she was a pinup girl back in the day. I think that this does lend itself to being remade, and I do hope that it does happen at some point. I think it has interesting concepts, and it's well worth doing. And now that the Snyder Cut's coming out in a couple of months here, or next month, actually, we're going to do an episode on it with our buddy Shaheen. Maybe Zack Snyder. He does a lot of good work with this type of like religious element, and could maybe take this in a new direction. So just if anyone has his ear, you know, let him know, like, hey, Logan's Run, ripe for a remake. And I'm going to give this Daniel 7 out of me. That's my score.
Right on. Positive scores all around?
Fairly positive. I think it has a kitsch factor to it that almost makes it endearing. You know, like,
yeah.
If I didn't give it the kitsch curve, it would probably be like, wow, this is like really kind of hard to watch, like the special effects and whatnot. Like opening scene, I really felt like I was watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood when the trolley goes through the tunnel. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're going ding, ding. And
yeah. And the sky is falling effects are not good. The fire effects are bad. You know, I mean, it suffers from being a film of its time. Maybe if it had gotten a little more practical and a little less, I don't know, whatever those little gels are that they use in front of, you know, the ray tracing, that kind of thing. It's kind of like a primitive ray tracing effect. But it ruins your enjoyment if you're looking for some kind of masterpiece. But it's still a fun ride and still a perfectly competent story.
I view it sort of as like a time capsule, you know, like this is what they could do at the time. And in a way, like, I feel like that's how you should view any old movie. You know, you should look at it as for what it was, given what was going on at the time, what technologically was capable and whatever the, you know, culture was saying at the time, rather than going back and changing things around or putting trigger warnings on things. Like I saw recently that Disney has now a trigger warning when you watch The Muppets.
Yes, I saw that too. Yeah, it's very problematic, those Muppets.
Yeah. So anyway, things are getting weird. Things are getting super weird as we approach last day here on this human civilization on Earth. It certainly feels like we're reaching an endpoint of something here. Yeah. But well, other than this show here, and you can find the show notes and more, like I said, at lastnighters.com/165, and we'll have links to all the previous episodes that Dennis has been a part of. You've been a great guest many, many times, and we'd love to have you back again. I know we've got a little list that we've been throwing back and forth, so the next time we have you on, we'll be doing probably another classic film. It seems like that's kind of your niche here. And Robert, I think next week we're going to sort of talk a little bit about the time of classic films or some classic films being made, but it's a more recent film. It's about the HUAC era, the House Un-American Activities Committee era, the McCarthyism, related to Hollywood and blacklisting people for the Red Scare, for having communist sympathies, and it is called Trumbo. Now, you've seen this, and you recommended it. I have not yet seen it. I just watched the trailer after you suggested it, and I was like, okay, right up our alley. Let's definitely do it. So we're going to have Keith Knight of Don't Tread on Anyone join us for that one. But do you want to give anyone a preview of what you think we're going to be discussing related to that next week?
Yeah, so the movie is a biopic, essentially, of Dalton Trumbo, a classic, one of the best screenwriters probably in Hollywood history. I don't know. I mean, there are probably names that are greater than his, but he did write some like Oscar winners. And when the Red Scare was happening, he was absolutely a communist and he was blacklisted, and whether rightfully so or wrongfully so, I think it'll be fun to get into with Keith and Daniel and myself. I'm kind of a little bit on the fence. This is one that kind of makes me feel uncomfortable. Because on the one hand, censorship is, you know, I'm generally against it, but I'm also for free association. So if these people didn't want to work for him, but it wasn't necessarily entirely all that cut and dry. And then there's, of course, also the government involvement and that sort of thing. So there's a whole lot of factors in play. There's the fact that he's a communist and he thinks it's just sharing. It's there's a lot of material that's right up our alley. And I think it'll be a great episode with Keith.
All right. Yeah, definitely looking forward to watching this one and taking a couple of notes. But, you know, as any episode with Keith, we don't have to say much. He'll
the guy's a monster.
Yeah, we'll just wind him up and he'll go for a good 20 minutes at a time. We'll get a word in and then he'll go for another 20 minutes. And then it's the end of the show.
Yeah, there's also the classic question of is Dalton Trumbo a good father? Because there's also some home life issues that it gets into. I mean, it's a whole biopic, so there's going to be endless amounts of content.
Okay, I'll be prepared for that question because that's always the Robert question.
That's right.
For me.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
All right. Well, Dennis, any final words before we get into the Kathleen Turner Overdrive available for our Patreon supporters like yourself? And people can go to lastnighters.com/Patreon to get a piece of that.
I'll make one comment about, you mentioned some awards for this movie. It did get a special achievement award from the Oscars for visual effects, which, I mean, today we think that they're kind of terrible, but back then they were considered maybe a little bit more cutting edge. So, you know, that's one of those things we have to kind of take with a grain of salt. Oh, and also the guy that plays the doctor in the movie is the son of the director of the movie.
Oh, okay.
So.
Yeah, he wasn't half bad.
Yeah, he has a career as an actor, so it certainly makes sense. But it's like, oh, that's kind of an interesting little piece of trivia.
All right, very good. Well, thanks again for being our guest. And Robert, you want to give people other ways they can support the show? And then we will sign off.
Yeah, you can always support us on Patreon or subscribe to us on YouTube or subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app, wherever podcasts are sold for the low, low price of $0.00. It just requires your time to listen. And we appreciate that time because time is the ultimate currency that we all have a finite amount of. So if you choose to spend your time listening to this show, hanging out with us and then talking about us, that is high praise, whether or not you give us a review on the old Apple Podcasts or wherever you are listening. We appreciate that. And thank you all very, very much. Have a great day. Take care of each other. Stay safe from the snow and the cold, and look forward to warmer weather in the future.
All right. Well said. And thank you guys very much for being our audience. We do appreciate that. And we'll see you guys all next week for Trumbo with the great Keith Knight of Don't Tread on Anyone. And with that, we'll say goodnight from last night, everyone. Peace out. All right, and continuing the transmission on the Actual Anarchy podcast for just one more segment before we get into the Kathleen Turner Overdrive. And I like to think of this one as what might get us kicked off of the old YouTubes and any other social media spaces. But I wanted to ask you guys if you saw any parallels to what's going on today with a big lie being perpetrated in order to control the populations and getting them to acquiesce to, you know, restrictions and taking things medically that they might otherwise not. I was watching this. I'm like, wow, you could just change a couple of words in here and we're talking about present day situations.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about, Daniel. Are you referring to some kind of a current news type thing that's happening?
Perhaps I might be, but yeah, I just couldn't help but think that you have this governmental structure here, you know, this computer system that's basically telling everyone this massive lie to get them to comply with its diktats and even to think that they're good things, right? And that they're virtuous people for following these things. And I just look at mainstream media and what's being propagated and out in, you know, news and entertainment and political rhetoric. And it certainly seems like I've seen some parallels on this.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting in the movie. You know, it really treats, like I said, it infantilizes these people because you're not just explaining the reality of the situation to these people. Like, we get our food from this source and this source, and you need to have this source, and we only have so much of X, Y, and Z. We have these kind of resources. It would almost behoove the, I don't know if it was like a, like an AI that was kind of in charge of the computer. It was almost like a 2001 situation with Hal and kind of like predating on the people, but the robot didn't seem to have a dog in the fight. I didn't really quite understand the motivation of the robot and whether, or the computer, whether or not it keeping the status quo the same, right? Because otherwise you're just going to be like, okay, everybody listen. This is what we got here in this situation. And outside this situation, it's kind of a crapshoot. You can take off and take care of it. But at least in the Matrix, we're given a story as to why the machines need these people as batteries, whether you know, the science of that, forget about that. But at least you understand why the machines need the humans and the need to maintain the status quo. In this film, it's not really clear why.
It's just maybe the programming.
Yeah, maybe just the programming from the original creators, and it's just kind of maintained the system over the hundreds of years or whatever. But I would have appreciated some kind of interest in maintaining the situation as it was for some kind of at least nefarious reason, or at least for the computer to maintain itself or something like that. Like it needed the people to repair it in order for it to maintain, because it couldn't repair itself or something. You know what I mean? Because otherwise it's just like, why not just let people do what they're going to do? Why need to have this big lie, like you say?
Right. Yeah. It's also sort of like maybe it's the nature of bureaucracies where they're just propagating themselves for the sake of themselves. You know, so it doesn't even need to understand why or have a real motivation other than just focused on the task at hand. So like, you know, it was programmed to do a certain thing and it's not going to deviate from that. Sort of like Box exhibits that when he's like, well, I ran out of this stuff to process from the ocean. So then I just started to process the next protein source that came in.
Right, right. No, it could be, yeah, since that, yeah, that the nature of the bureaucratic nature of the machine falling through on its programming, regardless of the changing nature of the situation. So it's not keeping tabs on the improving situation outside. Like right in the beginning of the movie, it talks about how there's ecological disaster from pollution and overpopulation and that sort of thing. Well, you go outside today and it's perfectly fine and empty and there's plenty of room and space for everybody to go outside and have land and to grow crops and whatever, but they keep them inside with not only with violence and force, but also this propaganda.
Yeah. You know, it reminds me, and then I'll let you get in on this, Dennis. I feel like we're keeping you quiet over there, but okay. I was talking to a former cop this morning. I forget what prompted this, but, it was that article I sent you from Target Liberty about, is it okay to lie to a bureaucrat or to the government? And it gave various reasons, but one of the points in there was, you know, talking about Miranda rights, where they're basically telling you that anything you say, we will use it against you. We can, and we will. We're admitting that. So, you know, don't tell us stuff. Is essentially what should be the takeaway from that, but nobody ever reads it that way. So I was talking to this cop and I was like, yeah, so it seems like what's happening here is, rather than looking at the overall scope of what they're doing as police officers, they're more focused on these tactics in which people can be tricked into incriminating themselves, and then focusing on the stats that result from that, for like close rate or getting a certain number of crimes and other measurements. And so they're so focused on the minutia that they don't take into the overall scope of whether what they're doing is right or wrong to begin with. And that reminds me of that bureaucratic nature, where they're so focused on just the task at hand that they're not taking in the overall view of, how does this fit into the greater world? Is this still even a necessary thing? How is this affecting something down the road? What consequences are being at hand here, rather than just focusing on this very narrow view?
Right. Hence the banality of evil. People just doing their jobs, not understanding the greater consequences.
Yeah. I hope I made sense of actions. My mini rant there.
Well, I think then, as an individual, you're kind of perplexed about whether you're dealing with someone that you can rationalize with, which means you will talk to them, or whether it's going to be somebody that just is an automaton following the dictates of the book. And I mean, I've run into people where, well, I've been pulled over for speeding, and I'm very nice and friendly and chatting with the guy, and gee, I'm sorry about this and that and the other thing. I'm not trying to be real quiet or anything. And then they just let me go. And, you know, it's probably some white privilege going on there, but still, I'll take it, you know. And I think, as a, you know, when you're in that situation, you don't know whether you're dealing with somebody you can actually talk to or not. Mm-hmm. And that's a little bit uncertain. But getting back to your point, I definitely was thinking about the sort of cancel culture, the right thinking versus the wrong thinking, where Logan tells her, you know, just don't think those thoughts. It wasn't clear, though, what they do about that in their little world. I mean, if somebody gets up in the middle of Arcade and says, you know, I think we should all go running, is there a jail? Do they, you know, take away their food privileges or their circuit privileges or something else? We don't really know. I mean, in the Arcade, the one guy was getting ready to kill Logan, right? He took his chain off and they were going down the escalator, and it looked like, well, he could just kill him right there in the middle of the Arcade. And what would happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like a lot of that was just uncertain, but clearly the power of the state there, I think, came through in terms of the things that we see today, in our world, and the attempts to steer people in certain directions and to correct people for wrong thinking and reward them, I guess, for right thinking.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Sesame credit that they use in China. It's like a social credit score, which, coming to a country near you, probably definitely seems to be happening. But anyway, we should probably wind this down. We've been going a little bit long already. So this has been our episode on Logan's Run, episode 222 of the show. Find the show notes more at actualanarchy.com/222. We have Kathleen Turner Overdrive available for our Patreon supporters right after this. So go to actualanarchy.com/Patreon and join us next week for Trumbo with great Keith Knight. And we will have a lot of fun with Keith. He talks a mile a minute, more than makes up for my lack of speed with my conversing skills, I think. So should be a good time. Indeed. Thanks again, Dennis. We really do enjoy having you on.
Thanks for having me.
Dennis Six. Thank you, sir.
All right. And we'll see you guys all next week. Maximum freedom. Peace out.
Chipmunks. CHIPMUNK. We're the chipmunks. Guaranteed to brighten your day. Doot, doot. Doot, doot, doot. Doot, doot, doot.